Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There is a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success. My name is Mark R. LePage, and you are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, where each week I speak with inspiring, passionate people who share their knowledge and expertise, all to help you build a better business as a small firm entrepreneur architect. Daniel Stewart, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Mark, thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
It's great to have you here, Daniel. You're an active member of the community, of the Entree Architect community, so it's great to have you on here and to talk to you one-on-one. Let me introduce you to our audience. Daniel Stewart, a licensed commercial pilot, a certified flight instructor, a businessman and entrepreneur, and a licensed architect in California, where he practices at a small firm in Fullerton. Early in his professional life, Daniel taught pilots, and after that, he was a cargo pilot. And after retiring from aviation early in his career, Daniel moved to architecture and joined us. Much of Daniel's experience practicing architecture has been larger projects in large and medium-sized firms. He's been a power user of Revit since 2004, and today he teaches Revit online at cdb-university.com. Daniel's project experience includes fast food restaurants, parking structures, military housing, apartment buildings, John Wayne Airport in Orange County, California, call centers, and a bunch of single-family residential work. So a pretty interesting background, Daniel. You've got a very diverse story, very diverse portfolio. So I'm looking forward to this conversation. And I want to know where it all started. I wanted to understand your origin story. So when did you discover your passion for architecture? It sounds like it came later in your career. Who inspired you to do that, or what inspired you to do that? So share that journey. What's your origin story?
Yeah, so I guess flash back to when I was going through college. I don't know that I really wanted to go to college. Interestingly enough, I mean, I think I knew I would, but I didn't really want to. And so I found myself in St. George, Utah, and the local small town, bigger now, but definitely smaller back then. And there was a local college, and they had somehow I'd stumbled upon an aviation program and airplanes. And that really turned me on.
How old were you at that point?
I'm guessing I was 20.
Okay. So was there an interest in aviation and airplanes as a kid? What pushed you towards airplanes?
Good question, Mark. So this is kind of interesting, but I can remember, I grew up on a farm actually. And so I can remember being out on the farm and seeing airplanes fly overhead. And I do remember, I was like, man, I love to be a pilot. That would be so much fun. And so it was always this thought that I had as a kid. And so, you know, maybe when I saw this flight program, I was like, oh my gosh, you know, I never knew, how do you become a pilot? And hadn't really thought, actually, I had thought about it because I kind of wanted to go into the Air Force as a military, as a pilot, but did not get accepted doing that. So I suppose I kind of did have it in my head. So when I found this flight program, I was really interested.
So you went to flight school instead of college, or was it part of a college?
Sort of. So I was really interested in aviation. So I started this flight, this aviation program, which is in a normal university.
Okay.
I think it was Dixie College at the time. And so, you know, the thing is, I took like almost all aviation and, you know, got my pilot's license and was flying. And then of course, you know, you have to kind of grow up and it's like, oh yeah, I have to do my general education. And so, you know, kind of moved on to doing the general education. But anyway, the real driver to get me into school, at least to make me really excited about it was aviation.
And so you got your pilot's license, and do you still fly today?
I do. I maintain my pilot's licenses, flight instructor as well. I'm not super active with it. I do more architecture and architecture related stuff and family.
So once you got your license to fly, in your bio, it says you taught pilots and flew cargo planes. So how did that, what's that story? How did you go from a pilot's license to teaching air pilots?
Yeah. So the way it works, when you're a burgeoning pilot, you first get your private pilot's license, and then you get your instrument rating, and then a commercial pilot. At that point, you're going to have about 250 hours, roughly, and you're going to need to get a job. You're going to need around 1,000 hours to possibly 1,500 hours. And so the road to get that time, because flying is so costly, you know, you're not probably going to pay for that. It would be $100,000 or something. And so the way that pilots learn and gain that experience is by teaching. And so the path to becoming a commercial pilot is to teach, which is interesting because it's sort of backwards. It's like, hey, you're the green pilot here. Why don't you teach all these people how to fly?
Right. That's kind of scary as we see these planes flying over our heads.
Yeah. So, but, you know, in reality, teaching people really helps you learn.
Right.
Once you can teach people, you really have a good grasp on the concept. And you do learn so much by teaching people. And I, you know, would kind of call it like, you know, preventing this person from killing me. And you do learn a lot because, you know, they do things that you would not want to do, and you have to make sure that you're safe. And so you learn from just even that experience there.
Yeah.
And of course, having to understand the concept well so that you can explain it to someone so that you can transfer that learning. So anyway, that's the way that works. You start out teaching, then you move into the commercial world where you can actually get a job.
Yeah. And so did you do that? Was that the plan? Was once you got your license and you went through school, and was the idea, okay, I'm going to be a commercial pilot. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to fly planes.
Yes, absolutely.
And so you flew cargo planes? Was that your job? Is that ultimately what you did?
Correct. So after I was teaching, I think, you know, I had several sort of corporate jobs, which would be, you know, flying for some company. I flew some passengers around for, you know, this guy had an airplane and I would fly his family around. So that was one of my jobs. I also flew traffic. You've heard traffic reports, you know, in various cities where they're, and I used to fly those reporters.
Yeah.
Also taught, and then moved into the corporate. Well, I guess I should say, you know, when I came out of college, it was actually, there was like no jobs. But anyhow, that was always the plan, was to be, I really wanted to be a pilot. Absolutely. Yeah.
So you achieved that goal and you flew planes and you had your commercial license and you worked for, you know, airlines. And so what happened? How did you end up in architecture? What was the transition between flying planes and architecture?
Yeah. So when I became a pilot, the way to make it easy is to go where the jobs are. And so it wasn't where my home was. And I think that's very typical of pilots, because when you become, say, an airline pilot, you'll be domiciled somewhere. The chances of that actually being your home is not very great. So I was, I guess my base, if you will, was in the Midwest. And so, you know, you kind of spend all this time away from anybody that you know, you know, flying around. So it's kind of very disconnecting from community. There was really not much community. And so I think I had just decided at one point that this was not something that I wanted to continue after several years of flying, you know, professionally, that it wasn't something that I wanted to continue. And I thought hard about what it is I might go into, how I might transition out and get into something else.
So it was a lifestyle decision. You had this lifestyle, forced lifestyle, caused by the profession you chose,
yeah,
because you had to fly all over and they based you where they needed you. And so you made a decision that that's not the lifestyle that you wanted to live and you needed to make a change. So how did you go? So I understand that. All right, we're not going to do flying anymore. I need to find something else. So how did architecture enter the story?
Yeah. So I'm going to flash back slightly, but just in college, one of the things to become an airline pilot was you needed to have a bachelor's degree. And so at that time it was like, okay, what am I going to do my bachelor's in? And when I was growing up, one thing I didn't mention, but my grandfather was an architect. And so when I was growing up, I would go to his house and I found myself oftentimes at his drafting table and I would draft things up here and there. And I really enjoyed that. It was comforting. And I liked his lifestyle. He had a good lifestyle. He was well paid. They didn't, you know, want for money. And he was a really nice guy, which, you know, I don't know if that plays into it or not, but it just, he was somebody that I respected.
Yeah. So you had some seeds planted as a child. Yes. So you had an example, somebody was there that you respected and that you loved and you saw he enjoyed what he was doing. And so what am I going to do? It, you know, one of those things pop in your head. Well, grandpa was an architect.
And I thought, you know, when I was going into aviation, yes, the plan was to go into aviation, but I wanted to choose. And in fact, I kind of always had this as a backup plan. What else would I want to do? And I thought architecture was the thing. And so I actually had kind of planned that to be the backup plan. So when I did retire from aviation, which I don't recommend. I mean, you know, a career change like that, it was not planned. I don't, if I had known that in the beginning, I would not have done it that way. But I did kind of have this backup plan. And so when I did retire, it was pretty clear to me that I wanted to do architecture.
And how old were you when that transition happened?
I think I was 25.
Okay.
I think it was somewhere there.
And so what did you do? So you had some background in college. You took some architecture courses. But it wasn't an architecture program. It wasn't an accredited program. It was architecture, general education architecture, like architectural history and that kind of thing.
Yeah. This is kind of interesting, but, you know, I did begin architecture school.
Okay.
But later, I noticed how demanding the program was.
Yeah.
And felt that I couldn't continue. And so I at some point exited and changed my degree and then graduated with a bachelor's in geography and cartography with an emphasis in cartography, which is kind of map making. It's sort of drawing.
Yeah. I love maps.
Yeah. So
let me make sure I understand this. So while you were in flight school, you were also in an architecture program? Is that the timeline? I got it.
Yes.
Okay. Totally understand that now. So you have a demanding course load in flying, because that's not easy either. Yeah. And we all know, anybody who's been through architecture school knows the rigors of architecture school. And so I could definitely understand that. And so you needed to choose one. You chose flight. And went in that direction and then decided this lifestyle change. So it makes sense. Okay, let's go to plan B. That was the idea that if it wasn't going to work with flight, I would do an architecture program. So what did you do? Did you go, so you went back to architecture school?
So I never did, actually. I found myself in California, and in California, they have a program where you can basically do an apprenticeship.
Yeah.
And so I had considered going back to architecture school, but found it kind of tough to jump out of life with all the bills that I had and just like, go back to school. So I had opted to go ahead and continue working. Well, I found a job with an architect, which is pretty challenging, as you can imagine, I'm sure. Here's a guy, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, a little bit of architectural background, but not much, not like most graduates. But it was in San Francisco at a time when business was booming. It was back in the .com.
Yeah.
Height of the .com. And man, they just needed people left and right. So I found a firm that would hire. In fact, I found two opportunities and really wanted the first opportunity, but it was moving very slowly. I didn't know that they were going to do it. The second opportunity came along. I took it. And then the first opportunity reached out to me once again. Once they found out I'd already taken an opportunity, they said, never mind. They kind of rescinded their offer. But anyway, I found my way into an architecture firm, and it was a great group. I mean, it was a great group, great company, great place to learn and kind of cut my teeth on architecture. And so
did you stay there for all the time you needed in order to acquire your license?
No, I stayed there for about 4 years, moved on to another place. That one was shorter, for about a year, and then moved on to another place. So over the course of, I mean, actually several jobs, because you have to get 8 years of experience mm-hmm. to do the apprenticeship program through California Architects Board. So it took me some time. And then, I should have started studying. I mean, I had architects tell me like, start studying early so that, once you have your experience, you can just get your license. Of course, I didn't listen to that. And then, just doing your AREs, it's not easy. It takes time. And so anyway, so I was licensed in 2011. So it's been some time now, but it took me a little bit of time because, my first job in architecture was probably in 2000-ish. And so I finally got licensed in 2011.
And then when did you start your own firm?
Started my own firm. I had started a small thing in 2009 after I had been laid off. That was kind of the crash in 2009.
Yeah.
And so I had started my own thing and contracted with an architect to provide the architectural services. That was the first time I kind of started a firm. Mm-hmm. And then later I started that firm, if you will. It was always kind of there, but hadn't been really operational. And so I started to operate that firm once again.
Let's take a quick break to thank our sponsors for their support of this episode. RCAT, Studio Services Bookkeeping, FreshBooks, and Twinmotion. I'm hearing it more and more among the Entree Architect community. Your workload is piling up. And with project conditions changing and limited time to get things done, it's good to have information at your fingertips. RCAT.com provides architects, engineers, spec writers, and contractors with the most comprehensive libraries of building product content. And it's designed so you can access it quickly and efficiently. And even better, RCAT.com is free. It's free to use and requires no registration. So visit today at RCAT.com and access the information you need now. That's RCAT.com, ARCAT.com. Studio Services Bookkeeping, a division of Charette Venture Group, provides concierge remote bookkeeping services to small firm architects. Liberate yourself from bookkeeping tasks by outsourcing to trusted professionals who understand the nuances of your industry and your firm size. You can maintain control of your finances without doing all bookkeeping tasks yourself. Studio Services Bookkeeping goes beyond traditional bookkeeping to help you manage cash flow, analyze project profitability, handle invoicing, and streamline your financial systems. Learn how to start outsourcing your bookkeeping today at ss-bookkeeping.com/EntreeArchitect. And mention Entree Architect and get 5 hours of free bookkeeping with a 6-month contract. That's ss-bookkeeping.com/EntreeArchitect. When building a business you're passionate about, it's easy to feel like there aren't enough hours in the day. And if you're doing all the invoicing and accounting on your own, you're probably spending time on work you don't love. FreshBooks is built for business owners like you. It's the all-in-one accounting software that saves entrepreneurs and freelancers up to 11 hours a week. That's 11 hours that you can spend nailing a client pitch, serving your clients, or honing your craft as an architect. From building, sending, and following up on invoices, to tracking and managing expenses, to processing online payments, FreshBooks automates and simplifies all the tough and annoying parts of running your own business. It's also super easy to get up and running. And the award-winning FreshBooks support team is always available to answer questions. Try FreshBooks today for free. 30 days, no credit card required. 30 days. Go to entrearchitect.com/FreshBooks and enter Entree Architect in the How Did You Hear About Us section. That's entrearchitect.com/FreshBooks. And get more time back to build the business you love. What if you could visualize your building in a couple of clicks? Remove months from the design process, or create a bridge between stakeholders to solve problems before they even come up? Well, our friends at Twinmotion offer simple, real-time visualization for architects. Their state-of-the-art technology lets you view and edit your scene on the go, in the same pixel-perfect quality as the final rendering. Twinmotion seamlessly integrates with other tools like SketchUp and Revit, transforming your BIM or CAD models into high-quality images, panoramas, standard or 360-degree VR videos, or presentations. No wonder it's used by industry leaders like Zaha Hadid Architects and HOK. What's more, you'll have access to the world's largest library of 3D assets to populate your scene. Sound complicated? It's not. What if I told you that Twinmotion enables anyone to present their biggest idea in the easiest way possible, regardless of previous CG experience, or that it uses drag and drop assets and the power of the Unreal Engine to truly differentiate your projects? To learn more, visit twinmotion.com or download a free trial today. Visit our exclusive URL, twinmotion.link/EntreeArchitect. That's twinmotion.link/EntreeArchitect to try Twinmotion for free today. Please visit our platform sponsors today and thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community. Right from the beginning, in the early 2000s, working on Revit. Because I want to get to.
Yeah, sure.
Is in addition to running your own architecture firm, you recently launched a course called Revit 101, an all-inclusive course that teaches people how to learn and run Revit efficiently. So let's go back a little bit in your architecture career and talk a little bit about your experience with Revit. Pretty early on, working with Revit. Early 2000s. So when did you start using Revit, and when did you realize that, you know, this is something that I really loved to do?
So I was involved in AIA San Francisco at the time, and they had a program by a company called, I don't think I can remember it, but it's before it was acquired by Autodesk. It was back in the days. It was based out of in Massachusetts, and it was
Vectorworks.
No, I can't remember the name, but it was before Autodesk acquired them, and they were Revit at the time. The name of the software was Revit, but I can't think of the company name.
Right. I remember when Revit was Revit prior to Autodesk purchasing Revit.
Yeah.
And so, were you using were you using Revit before Autodesk?
Well, so what I was going to say is, no. So what I was going to say is, so being involved in AIA San Francisco, they had this program, presentation, if you will, by the makers of Revit. Mm-hmm. And Mark, I saw this presentation and I couldn't believe it. I was like, I was so excited and really felt like I had seen a view into the future. This software was the future of architecture.
You did look into the future because that's exactly what that was. That I remember when Revit was launched, or I don't know if it was launched when I remember it, but I remember it very early on before Autodesk acquired it. And it was like this magical software that was going to revolutionize the way architecture was done, because everyone was using CAD at that point. Everybody had moved on from hand drawing to CAD, and everyone was using AutoCAD. And Revit came along, and it was like, you know, the clouds parted.
And it was, I mean, to me, it was incredible. And I ran back to my firm and I told them about this software, and how awesome it was and how excited I was. And they were like,
yeah. Yeah. trying to convince them.
That's not that great. You know, just very, very skeptical. And so, I thought at that time, I'm like, well, I'm going to start using it on my own. So I bought access to this subscription. It was a subscription back then. I think it was like $90 for 3 months and you just paid quarterly.
Yeah.
And so that's how it kind of all started. Now I see it here. It's Charles River Software is who started it. And I want to say that it was Revit Revise Instantly. Like it was a...
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
And so so I bought this subscription, and every opportunity from there forward that I could use it, I did. Unfortunately, you know, I didn't have that many opportunities. I couldn't use it in my work. I could use it on the side and learn it on my own, but we didn't use it at work, despite my attempts to try to convince them to use it, you know. And so my next job, they were really excited about Revit. But, you know, Revit is not a simple thing to learn. Revit actually is, I would say that it's quite complicated. And so it's not something you learn in a weekend. I think it's not something that you learn on your own, even. I mean, I can tell you, back then, we didn't have the internet like we did now. Now you go online, if you want to look up a question, there's a lot out there. Chances are you're going to find it. It's amazing what I find when I have a question.
Yeah.
But back then, you know, you didn't have that. There weren't all these resources. So you were really on your own. So it was a real challenge to learn. And it's not easy. So anyway, well, I guess where I was going with this is, at this firm, they were really excited to do it. They sent me to it was like a 3-day training program, maybe a 4-day. And they're like, all right, you know, let's do this.
Let's switch everything over to Revit.
Yeah. And you know, then they'd say like, wait, can you change the way this looks? I don't like the way this looks.
Yeah. Yeah. And Revit then was not what Revit is today. It was funky and hard to use and it looked terrible. And
yes,
it was awful.
Yes. Yes. All true. All true.
But the future was obvious. I mean, the future, it was obvious that this was the future.
Yeah.
So you used it, you've been using it for almost 20 years now, clearly have become an expert and proficient in Revit, using Revit on a regular basis. So where did the course, what inspired the course? So now you have your architecture firm, you're a power user of Revit, you understand it and how it works. You have this background in teaching, you know, you were a flight instructor. What was the inspiration for putting together a course to help others learn it?
So the inspiration kind of came sort of selfish, but I had my firm. And one thing that I know, having worked with many other Revit users over time, is that many people, especially new people, do not know how to do Revit. They are clueless. I mean, it's just, like I say, it's just not an easy program to learn. And unless you have somebody there to kind of help you along, It's just a real challenge. So I wanted to train my new employees how to do Revit. Like, one of the scariest things that for me is that when you find somebody who really knows Revit, they probably don't know it right or probably yeah. don't do it the way I would want it done.
Right.
So my method is I want to take as little time and make this as easy to use and make changes as possible. So partly it comes from a system of the way that I put drawings together, and partly it's as it relates to Revit. I leverage Revit to make my job easier. And so I rolled out this training program for my own employees so that I could teach them how to do and how not to do Revit.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's you call it Revit 101. So it's intended for people who have never done it.
Never touched it.
And need to learn how to use it. Those architects, many of us in my generation who, you know, started in the profession early on with CAD, that we were, you know, I'm 50, almost 51. I'll be 51 later this month. And the I was in that transition between hand drawing and AutoCAD.
Yeah.
So, you know, I helped my first firm transition from drawing, hand drawing, to AutoCAD. And so there's a lot of architects out there who are around my age, who are in my generation, who never made that change, right? They're still running AutoCAD. And for the last 10 years, we've been saying, oh, we need to shift. We need to make that transition from AutoCAD to Revit. And so this is a perfect solution for that, right? Because there's many of us who have not transitioned, haven't transitioned for many reasons. One, I think, is that it's time consuming. It's, you know, yeah. we know what we do, what we're doing. We know how to do it. And we are at a level in our firms with a lot of responsibility. I don't have time to stop yes. and learn this program. Yeah. I think, and I also think that there's a very large dose of fear, right? What's going to happen if I stop doing it the way I do it? And so is this sort of a solution for that? Is that the intent to sort of help people who haven't made that transition have enough confidence to make that jump?
Absolutely. I mean, it, you know, again, selfishly, it was really for my employees to get them from the point of never having touched Revit to being a capable user of Revit and this program and completing documents the way that I wanted them done. And yeah. so absolutely the intention was to provide everything in this program, the support, the training, the practice, to be able to be a comprehensive, capable Revit user in the fastest possible time.
Yeah. How long do you think it would take somebody who's never done it? To get to the point where they can use it. Yeah, I mean, they're not an expert, but they can use it on a regular basis pretty comfortably. Which probably is not a very... Go ahead.
You were going to say, go ahead.
I was just going to say it's probably not, you know, a very short amount of time, because there's a lot more to it than just understanding how to use Revit. There's a whole psychological piece to it.
That's true. Yeah. I kind of thought about that. How long would it take? And I think there's it depends on a couple things, but one of them is how far have you progressed through the program? Because I've tried to make this program comprehensive in that there's nothing that you haven't touched, right? Because someone might come to you and say, oh, I need you to do it this way, or I need you to do this thing. And you're like, oh, I have not learned that, you know? Yeah, how right. do I do that? So I would say it's probably 3 months of some pretty involved, you know, pretty good time spent on the course. Maybe let's say at a minimum, a couple hours a day.
Yep. Yep. Break down the course for me. How does it work? What's the structure of it?
So the course introduces each tool, each and every tool, so that you, like, one of the biggest things that I think is when you're learning software, you don't necessarily know have to know how to do each and everything that it does, but you definitely need to know each and everything it does, right?
Understood. Yeah.
So if you know that it can do it, you're not doing it another way, right?
Yeah, that's important, right? And that's how you get into doing things the wrong way, because you figure out a way to get it done, but it may not be the right way.
Exactly. And in this training program, I teach you how to do and how not to do things. Now, later on, if you become this great Revit user, you kind of gone through the course, you can change sort of the methodology, but I'm going to give you a methodology in going through this. Don't do it this way. Do it this way. I have a list of rules that we do. So for everybody, this is the first rule. So this is the rule, unless, and then you can tell me, why do you think you don't want to do it that way? You know, and then we can kind of talk about it. So it's a set of rules. And so, back to kind of your question. So we introduce every tool so that they know everything the program can do. And then we couple that with practice so that they've had a chance to use it. Now, also, Revit is a really, so this is really interesting about Revit. Revit is very simple on the surface, as if it's the ocean, but it's also very deep. So I can really take almost any of the topics and just go super deep in it and complicate it. So it's very easy that at the surface, it's very easy to learn, but some of the tools you can kind of go deeper and they get more complicated. So again, know what each of the tools are. We have the training material there so that if you haven't used that, you can go in and do it. So there's sort of different ways you could approach the course. One is as needed, right? Which I don't necessarily recommend because you're going to really kind of clunk through. What would be nice is you go through the course, have all the tools introduced, practice them. You can even practice them on projects. And then as you forget things, because you will, there's so many different tools in Revit, you're going to forget how to do it. So you have the training material to go back over to be able to do that. So
how do listeners learn more about Revit 101?
So if you'd like to learn more about Revit 101, you can go to cdb-university.com.
Okay.
And if you go to the sales page, it outlines what each of the courses are and what they have.
Okay. Yeah. So there's different levels of how you can purchase the course.
Yeah, that's right. There are different levels and I can just briefly outline them, but the top level, which is the one that I'd recommend, is video instruction, weekly live Q&A by a sort of a Zoom call, practice assignments, review of those assignments, and coaching. So the coaching is telling you what to do next, helping guide you through whatever it is that you're doing, whether it's
a project. So it's all inclusive, has everything you need, has support and one-on-one coaching.
Correct.
So what are the other levels?
So the other ones go down from there and are less costly. And so the first drop-off is the coaching, the review and the coaching. And then we also have just the video assignments only, or the video with assignments, but doesn't come with the coaching and the live Q&A.
Right. So if somebody wanted to just buy the videos, they can do that.
Exactly.
Okay. Exactly. Great. And did you, before we started to record, you'd mentioned you wanted to give away one of these courses.
That's right.
How do we do that?
So as a thank you to you, Mark, and for your listeners, I'd like to give away a free course of the video only.
Great.
And so if your listeners will just email me at info@cdb-university.com and put Entree Architect in the subject line, I will add you to a list where we'll randomly choose some listeners and give away that free video course.
All right, great. So the email is info@cdb-university.com.
Yes,
that's it. Just put in the subject Entree Architect, and you'll be put on a list, and then one member will be randomly chosen to receive a free version of the video course, video only course. Thank you. Thank you for that. I appreciate that.
Absolutely.
I'm sure our listeners will appreciate it as well. Before we wrap up here, Daniel, I wanted to ask you the one thing that I ask everybody. What is one thing that a small firm architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow?
So I have one thing to come back to, and I'm going to go ahead and answer that question now.
Yeah.
To all of those, all of you out there who have some sort of idea that you're thinking about, that you've thought about, you know, for a long time, just start it now. Start it now and get it done.
Agreed. I agree with that. That's for sure. So is that your answer? Is that your answer? Because that's a very good answer to that question.
Yeah. That's my answer. Yeah. And then I just wanted to add that if people are interested in the course, again, as a thank you, I'm offering a 1/3 off of the courses. And I have a coupon code that you can put in there if you're interested. So I'll, you know, you can put that in the show notes. And I can also just tell you, but it's EntreeArchitect511 is the coupon code. And for a limited time, we'll be giving 1/3 off the courses that we offer.
So it's EntreeArchitect511. We'll give you 30% off whatever you purchase there.
Yeah. And when you're in the purchase cart, just there will be a coupon and you can put that in there. And if you you know, have any questions, if you'll go to cdb-university.com, you'll kind of have to go down, but below the course curriculum, you'll see my contact information, and feel free to reach out to me with any questions. There's a phone number there, and also the email that we just stated. And you know, I'm an open book. I'm happy to discuss and help in any way I can.
All right. That's fantastic. Thank you, Daniel. His name is Daniel Stewart. The course, again, is Revit 101 for Production, which is the actual name of the course, Revit 101 for Production. You can learn more about the course and more about Daniel. You can reach out to Daniel at cdb-university.com. You can find him on YouTube. Just search cdb-university learning Revit, and you could find that YouTube channel with a bunch of information there. He's on Twitter at Architect Daniel, but leave the E off of architect. So just spell out Architect Daniel, but leave the E out of architect, and you'll find him on Twitter. Again, if you want a free version of the video only course, email Daniel right now at info@cdb-university.com, and make sure you put Entree Architect in the subject line, so he knows that that's why you're doing that. And you could ask for that free version, and you'll be put on a list that will he will randomly choose one free customer to receive that video course. So Daniel, thank you. Thanks for coming by, talking about your story. Very interesting story. Probably a very unique story. Not too many architects have started as commercial pilots and then moved to architecture. You know, pretty extensive processes to become an architect to become a pilot. So very interesting. Thank you. Thanks for sharing your story and sharing your knowledge here at Entree Architect Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I've really enjoyed it.
If you liked this episode of Entree Architect Podcast, please share a rating, write a review, and share a link to this episode with a friend. Links to all the resources we discussed today are available at the show notes for this episode found at entrearchitect.com/podcast. And thank you to RCAT, Studio Services Bookkeeping, FreshBooks, and Twinmotion for their support of this podcast. Entree Architect is proud to be a partner with the largest, most engaged AEC multimedia network on the planet, Gable Media. We're curating thought leadership for an audience dedicated to building a better world. Listen and subscribe to all the shows at gablemedia.com. That's gablemedia.com. And check out Entree Architect Academy membership, ready to edit business resources, live monthly training for architects, business training that is, a supportive architect community, yep, it's there, and Simple Systems, our new business system program developed for small firm entrepreneur architects just like you. It's in there for you at Entree Architect Academy. It's waiting for you right there at the membership. Come join me and hundreds of your entrepreneur architect friends. Visit entrearchitect.com/join to enroll today. Be well, my friends. Be healthy, happy, safe, and secure. Thank you for listening today. Love, learn, and share what you know.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure, and when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark Arlepage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.